So we are now on, this is the 13th again, October 13th in the afternoon, is that right? We're looking at the end of chapter 3 and the beginning of chapter 4. We're looking at near the end, the side called solubility intermolecular forces. For those of you interested, I already have posted the lecture from this morning, is already posted. So it's already there. Is it? No, it's not actually. It's ready to be posted, but I haven't posted it yet. I'm sorry. I just ran out of time. I'll get to it. It'll be done this afternoon, later tonight. And I'll get that test also. Nonpolar dissolves polar. Polar dissolves polar. Nonpolar dissolves nonpolar. So that means butter, which is kind of like nonpolar, will be dissolved in gasoline. While salt, sodium chloride, try to dissolve it in gasoline, won't do it. Simply won't do it. Two nuts. Does ammonia dissolve in water? Yes. Both molecules are polar. So we look at this. Now notice what these dashed lines are, ladies and gentlemen. Do you recognize what these dashed lines might be? Woo! Let's do we dissolve. Is this one? No, it's the other one. Doink. If I turn too many of these off, you guys will be snoring. Okay, so I can't turn off too many of them. Notice the ammonia, the partial end of positive, the partially negative end of ammonia, which is the nitrogen, is attracted to the positive end of water. You remember what the little demonstration I had this morning with the hydrogen bonding in water? So hydrogen bonding can also undergo the same thing with ammonia and water. Yes? Ammonium is NH4 positive. It's an ion. Ammonia is simply NH3, and there's no charge on it. Good question. Okay. So the attractive force is called what? Hydrogen pull ammonia into the water, distribute the ammonia waters throughout the water, forming a homogeneous solution. So any of you have used ammonia to clean up a spill or something, disinfect at home, that's actually ammonia water. There's only about 2 or 3% ammonia in that ammonia water. It's a very pungent smell, isn't it? Because it does leave the water pretty readily. But notice the dashed lines here are the hydrogen bonds that move from the hydrogen of one to the oxygen of another, or from the nitrogen of one to the hydrogen of the other. Please read about this, ladies and gentlemen. Please, please, please read about it. Okay, why don't they mix? Because water is what? And oil is? No. Water is attracted to other water molecules. Oil is attracted to other oil molecules. Oil and water is not attracted to each other at all. So the hydrogen bonds of water help solubilize water. The hydrophobic interactions of oil attract other hydrophobic interactions. Oil remains insoluble and floats on the surface. Why does it float on the surface? Because it's less dense than water. So what if you had oil that was more dense than water? Where would it be? On the bottom. That's exactly correct. Boiling and melting points. Energy used to overcome intermolecular attractive forces in the substance, driving the molecules into a less associated phase. So what is the most associated phase of matter? Most associated. That's a strange way of putting it. What has the strongest forces between the molecules? What is it? Solid. That's exactly correct. What's the next less strong attractions between phases, between molecules of a phase? Liquid, and what's the least attractive? Gas, that's correct. The greater the intermolecular forces, the more energy is required, leading to higher melting point. What is another word I use for melting point? Point, melting what? Temperature. So this is higher melting temperature of a solid, higher boiling point of a liquid. Okay, so literally, motion is heat. Now, I think I've demonstrated this to you. I want you to put your hands together. Put your hands together. Yeah! All right! Woo! Again, I'll put a laugh track on the same thing. Anyway, so you put this like this, and you begin to rub them. And what happened? Oh, man, my hands are so cold, but they're now getting all what? Warm. What's actually helping the warmth? Friction. But the more you rub, the what? What? The more heat you feel, is that correct? If you begin to slow it down, do you feel more heat or less heat? Less heat. And if you begin to stop at all, what do you got? No heat at all. heat is motion. What did I just say? Actually, if you guys, that's backwards. You'd say heat is motion. No motion, no absolute zero. The molecules are not moving at all. No heat, no motion. Okay? Heat, motion. So, you guys are all sitting back, way back there, because you're planning on falling asleep. We'll try to keep you awake this afternoon. Okay, you two in the way back with your computers. No, actually, you two that don't have the computers, because having you guys move, I'll get to you eventually. All right, so, could you two stand up here? Perhaps move into the aisle. Whose computer is this? Whoever's not here? Well, fantastic. Wouldn't that be amazing for them to come back and it's not here? Oh, boy. No, I know. Put it in the front. Yeah, I found this computer here. Just stand in the hall. I'll just stand in the aisle. Okay, now I want you to stand close together. Okay, now, they're a solid, which means this is a molecule, this is a molecule. The force of attraction between them, is that strong, middling, or weak? Strong. Okay, but I want to melt them. What is heat again? Heat is motion. So if they're not moving at all, what's their temperature? Not merely zero, not zero Celsius, which is, you're right, but I know you're saying what? Absolute zero. Okay, so we add a little heat to them, which means they're literally going to rock back and forth. They're going to start moving, vibrating, right? I hope you don't mind. Okay, so they're vibrating. Keep vibrating. Now, they're vibrating. That means they have a what?
Heat.
A temperature. They have heat in interior. They actually have a temperature. Does that make sense? All right. Now, they don't have a fever. They just simply have a temperature. Okay, and I'm going to put another laugh track in there. Okay, all right. So now, are they moving? They're vibrating, and they're moving because they have heat. But are they vibrating enough to separate themselves into a liquid? No, absolutely not. They're fixed in position. They're just vibrating back and forth like a choir. These guys, oh, this is just so nice. Now, if we begin to add more heat to them, they're going to do what?
Move more.
So are they hotter or cooler?
Hotter.
Well, if you slow them down, what are they now? Cooler. All right. Now, if I begin to vibrate them so much that they actually physically separate, boom, now just move away. Whoa. So still vibrate. You're vibrating. Okay. Are they touching each other? No. I've moved them in one phase from a solid to a what? Gas. Okay? Because they're not what? You don't like it? It's a poor analogy?
I was vibrating.
You were vibrating? Okay. Now, if, you see, what happens is, okay, so that's fine. Now, so does that, I said vibration is what?
Motion
or heat. Motion is heat. Heat is motion. Motion is vibration, this kind of thing. So why don't you guys sit down? Thank you very much. You're very kind. Now, yes, but now, if I need you to stand up, if you don't mind. Would you mind standing up? Thank you. I'll borrow your iPad later. All right. Okay, so, very nice. I like that. Okay, don't mean to embarrass you. Just come over here. Stand like this. Okay, now, where are we going to be a solid? We're going to be vibrating. That means our temperature is not what? You're not vibrating. Okay, all right. Okay, we're still touching each other. That means we're still solid. Is that correct? We're not vibrating in sync, are we? Okay, so there we go. We're now vibrating in sync. But we're still touching each other, still relative to each other, so we're still a solid. Is that right? Do we have heat? Yes, because we are what? Moving. If we stopped, what temperature are we? Absolute zero. But we're moving, okay? But someone just put a Bunsen burner on us. And so we're going to start vibrating a little harder, okay? Because we're adding more. Well, I don't care. Anyway, I don't care if there's a... Don't run into that because that'll fall. Now, if I push you into the wall. Okay, so we're doing like this. Now, what happens is, if it vibrates so much, then the intermolecular action between us is overcome. And what happens is, I now begin to slip and slide past each other, but I'm in constant contact because I'm still vibrating. All right, so what phase do I have here? What is it? What phase? Liquid. Now, if you keep heating me, eventually what happens? Boom. I start vibrating so much, I separate. And then I run into him, and still, so I'm bouncing, I'm hitting him so hard because I'm vibrating so much that we no longer are together. We're actually physically apart. So I'm what fae? Oh, you see, very tricky. I know, you see. I can run into the wall, doesn't matter. So the idea there is that heat is motion. Motion causes these molecules to vibrate. If they're a solid and they begin to vibrate enough, they eventually begin to slide past each other, and that changes them from what phase, which is what? Solid, to what next phase? Liquid. If I continue to heat them, they start vibrating even more, and eventually part, even as liquid, they fly apart, and they hit each other, and just that overcomes that connection, that energy, that force that's holding them together. They be moved from liquid into a gas. Okay, so energy, the greater the intermolecular force, the more energy required to leading to higher melting point of a liquid. So let's just, who do I need to pick on next? Okay, I'm going to pick on you because you're close. Sorry, would you mind standing up very quickly? All right, so, you know, she and I are the children of the 70s. Okay, all right, in the 80s. 70s and 80s and beyond. So that means we have a fairly strong attraction to each other. Is that correct? All right. Now, we're going to vibrate because we're getting hot. But since we're strongly attracted to each other, how much vibration do we have to have before we fall apart? A lot or a little? A lot. So because we're going to have to vibrate very, very hard before we fall apart. Now, what does that mean about the temperature we're at before we fall apart? Are we high or low? High temperatures mean high vibration, means if there is a solid that takes a lot of energy for it to melt, then there's a lot of attraction between the molecules. All right. So if you and I, and we just, you know, who knows, discover that you like classical music and I like Led Zeppelin, for example, we're not compatible. So we're not all that strongly attracted to each other. So is a high temperature going to cause us to fall apart, or a low temperature? Low. Are we? If we fall apart at a low temperature, are we strongly attracted to each other? No. Okay. So thank you very much. So the higher, the stronger the attraction between molecules, the greater the intermolecular force, the more energy or heat is required to leading to the higher melting point of a solid. Higher boiling point of a liquid. So the stronger the attractions, the higher the temperature before you change phase. Water has a lot of attraction because it takes a high energy. It takes boiling point, 100 degrees Celsius, before it begins to boil. That's a lot of attraction. There are sodium chloride and stuff is even higher. That's 600-800 degrees Celsius before it begins to melt. Very, very strong attractions. But like butter, the forces between butter, are they strong forces or weak forces, and how can you tell? Weak, because where do they melt? High temperature or low temperature? Low temperature. Low forces between molecules, low temperature of melting and boiling. High forces between molecules, high temperature, high melting point, boiling point, whatever. Does that make sense? Okay, that's what I was hoping for. All right, factors influencing boiling and melting temperatures. Strength of the attractive force holding the substance in its physical state. The stronger it is, the higher the temperature it is to melt it. Also, molecular mass. Larger molecules have a higher melting and boiling point than smaller molecules. So I took the smallest person in this class, and I believe that's you up there. Very nice. How tall are you? 4'10". How much do you weigh? 88 pounds. Wow, I'm two of her. Oh, man. At any rate, anybody more than, I weigh 200 pounds. Anybody weigh more than 200 pounds in here? Excellent. So, so that just means that if there was a bunch of me in a bottle, it would take a lot of temperature, a high temperature, before I begin to melt, because larger molecules have higher melting points. A bunch of her in a bottle, she doesn't weigh much. It wouldn't take much vibrational energy before she'd fly apart into a liquid or a gas. So she would have a low melting point or boiling point relative to me. Polarity. Polar molecules have higher melting points and boiling points due to their stronger attractive forces. So it's like I just need somebody else to stand up here next to me. Would you mind standing up next to me just very quick? I know I didn't mean to interrupt your listening to your tunes, but any rate, so if, in fact, yeah, just turn around. Yeah, just, that's exactly right. Now, if, of course, you know, we might be attracted, but if I had a positive charge here, because I have a polar molecule and a negative charge over here, and if she had a positive charge here and a negative charge here, is that right? Positive, negative. I would need for her to be positive and negative here, okay? So her left arm is negative, my right arm is positive. My left arm is negative, her left arm is negative. Now, we may weigh about the same, and we may have some force of attraction, but with opposite charges, clunk, that make the force of attraction even stronger, what is that going to mean about the temperature we melt or boil at? Are we going to melt at a lower temperature because of a stronger attraction, or a higher temperature because of a strong attraction? Higher because of its strength. So melting and boiling points, again, tell us how strong the intermolecular forces are. Now, warning. I am not talking about breaking covalent or ionic bonds. This is not talking about breaking ionic and covalent bonds. If you melt butter, does it change into carbon and hydrogen? No, it's simply what? Liquid butter. It's still butter. The bonds that make the butter are still there. We're talking about forces between the molecules, not the molecules themselves. Right? For example, she doesn't have to get up, but for example, we're sitting here, we're getting hot, we begin to melt. Doesn't mean my right arm is going to fly off. It's just we're no longer attracted to each other. It's kind of like when it's hot and muggy outside, and even though you like your girlfriend a lot, are you going to hang that close to her? Not really, no. Okay? That doesn't mean your arm is going to fall off. Okay, so the covalent ionic bonds of the compound are not what we're talking about. We're talking about forces between the molecules, not in the molecule. So they are not talking about breaking covalent bonds or ionic bonds. Remember that. Okay? Remember it. I can't tell you the number of times people come up to me and go, well, you know, it melted, so that bond is broken. No. Don't think so. It's only forces between the molecules, not within. The forces within the molecule are covalent bonds and ionic bonds. Pardon me. Now, a melting bonding type. Nitrogen. By the way, is nitrogen a polar or nonpolar? Yes, you have a question. What about hydrogen bonds? Are in fact misnamed, but they are not a covalent bond. They are not ionic bond. They are a very weak bond. I wish every time we said hydrogen bond, we go hydrogen bond, quote unquote. It's not a true bond. There are only two bonds, covalent and ionic. A hydrogen bond only happens to be a bond because they misnamed it 80 years ago. Okay? So it's a hydrogen attraction. It's hydrogen force. It's not a hydrogen bond. Okay? So is that helpful? Yes, because there's only two kinds of bonds, covalent and a hydrogen bond is neither one of those. It's simply a force of attraction due to the fact that hydrogen is attached to an oxygen, nitrogen, or fluorine. Nitrogen, notice N2, is that polar or nonpolar? Anytime you have the exact two elements connected together, it's going to be a pure nonpolar compound because it's pure covalent bonding. O2... polar or nonpolar? Nonpolar. Oh, no. Ammonia and water. Are those covalent bonds or ionic bonds that are holding the hydrogen to the oxygen? Are they covalent or ionic holding the hydrogen and the oxygen together? How do you know? Here is the rule once again. Metal bonding to a non... Oh, let me rephrase this. Nonmetal bonding to a nonmetal is always what kind of bond? Say covalent. Covalent. Metal to a nonmetal is always ionic. Metal to a metal is an alloy. Let me repeat this. Nonmetal bond to a nonmetal is covalent. Metal to a nonmetal is ionic. Metal to a metal is an alloy. That's right, which is different than the other. So, notice here, is nitrogen a nonmetal or a metal? Nitrogen. Nonmetal. Is hydrogen a metal or a nonmetal? Nonmetal. That's a covalent bond. These are covalent bonds. So that's why they call it polar covalent. Why are they polar covalent? Because are the two atoms that are connected there the same or different? Different. Automatically you have polar. Well, with the hydrogen and the nitrogen and the hydrogen and the oxygen, you also get this hydrogen bond. Thank you very much. Which is the high force of attraction, but it's not a bond, okay? So notice what happens here. These things melt at minus 219 degrees. Have you ever been that cold? I don't think so. Now then, have you ever been as cold as a melting point of water? Yeah, I mean, your surface temperature might have been that way. Well, I hope your surface temperature. You've been in that temperature of air. Has your skin ever been 0 degrees Celsius? One can only hope not, because if you did, you'd get what? Frostbite. Okay. So, has your skin ever been 100 degrees Celsius in boiling point? You've been in 100 degree air? Well, not Celsius, you haven't. What is the Fahrenheit equivalent of 100 degrees Celsius? Do you remember? 212. Anybody been in a 212 degree temperature? What's the hottest temperature ever recorded on the planet? At least during the time of man's temperature taking. About 134 degrees. Yep, 134 degrees. Air temperature. Now, sodium chloride. Notice, is this a metal? Say yes. Is the chlorine a metal or nonmetal? Chlorine, metal or nonmetal? Nonmetal. If it's a nonmetal, that means it's what kind of bond? Ionic. Ionic bonds are the strongest because they repeat and repeat and repeat. Notice the melting point is 801 and the boiling point is 1413. Sounds like an ancient history exam. Again, ionic, high melting points and high boiling points. Pure covalent, very, very low melting points and boiling points. Intermediate, where it's polar covalent, you got intermediate temperatures. Oh, and we're done with chapter... Chair's Council. Oh, thank goodness. I don't have to come. Okay. Boink. Dismiss. All right, so we're done with chapter 3. Did you realize that? No, are we? No. Yeah, we are. Excellent. So, we now are going to begin chapter 4. Chapter 4. Dr. Novak, I don't have chapter 4. I know you don't. This is why I printed it all out. Some of you did. All right. So would you do me a favor and pass these out?
Yes.
I know it's making you get up, but I would be grateful. Plus, it'll wake you up. Oh, isn't that rude? How rude am I? Rude. Okay, this is also on this is already on, D2L. So if you want it, that's fine. Some of you already printed it out. Did anybody already print it out? The man, I ought to give you a dime just for the printing out all your, give you a buck for your paper and ink. Did you print it all out? 65 pages? You didn't do four up or anything?
No, I can get it done for free.
Oh, wow. Actually, it's not done for free. It's just somebody else is paying for it. Yes. Is there truly anything ever for free? There is no free lunch. So when someone tells you, this plan will give you free medical exams, what's actually saying is, we're giving you exams that somebody else pays for. That's exactly right. And most of you are going to be in the medical field, either nutrition or dietetics or PT, and you'll learn to hate the idea that, yeah, it should be free. It should be free. Why should I have to pay for it? Well, who's going to pay me? Well, I don't know. I don't care. I just need my physical therapy for free. That's all. Okay, enough political mumbo-jumbo. Now, calculations of chemical equation. Did you bring any? You like this? This is like way back in the fifth edition. Look at this. Still works. Silly. So why are you buying a seventh edition book? I have no idea. But at any rate, because they can't get a hold of the fifth edition. Okay. Mole concept and atoms. This is the first handout on the chapter 4. Is there some confusion? How can this not? You okay? What's going on? They have to be stapled. Just one. Yeah, there's just one that's not stapled. That's probably the original. Oh. Yeah. And it's all stapled on the wrong side. Don't blame me. It's the stupid copier. All right. So, I guess we'll still wait until we get it all turned out. What's going on? This excellent? Okay. All right. Yeah, if you want to restaple it, that's fine. I apologize for the poor stapling and the strange rearranging. And we have one more person coming in here. Excellent. Thank you. All right. Well, we'll take a break in about a half an hour for about 5 minutes, and then we'll start up again. Atoms are exceedingly small. How small are atoms? It's almost unimaginable how small atoms truly are. Oh, by the way, I'm assigned chapter 3 homework. What, did I assign that already this morning? Yes, thank you. So, units of measurement for mass of an atom is an atomic mass unit. Fill in the word AMU. I went through here and highlighted everything you put in red. Make it a little more easily seenable. Seenable? Isn't that a nice word? What's another word for seenable? Visible. There we go. Carbon 12 is assigned the mass of exactly how many AMU? 12. And 1 AMU, which stands for what? What does an AMU stand for? Atomic mass. Is 1.66 times 10 to the minus 24th. Is that a large or small number? Very small. Exactly correct. And periodic table gives atomic weight in AMU. Da 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 da. Blow the man down. I'm taking out and putting out the periodic table so everybody can see it. Oh, was that it? Was that the only page? There was? No, there wasn't more on that page. Next page, massive atoms. This. Okay, we'll go through this. What's the atomic weight of one atom of fluorine? Well, how do you find this? You go here to the periodic chart, look for fluorine. It has what mass of one atom? 18.98840 AMU. You can't have a number without a unit. Okay, you can't have a number without a unit. So if I said to you, I weigh 92. Wink, wink, nod, nod. I'm so proud of how svelte I am. 92. Okay, what's missing? Units. To be accurate, you'd probably say kilograms. To be funny, you'd say tons. Yes. All right, because of that insult, we're now going to have a quick quiz. All right, now, what would be the mass of this one atom in grams? Well, every AMU weighs how many grams? 1.66 times 10 to the minus 24th. So it's a conversion factor. Times the fourth of one fluorine. See, 19 times that, the AMU cancel out, and you get 3.156 times 10 to the minus 23rd grams of fluorine for every atom. Ain't much there, folks. There ain't much there. And by the way, is there a balance can weigh that 1 gram? Say no. No, there's no balance that can weigh that small amount. Thank you. I'm trying to have a little chemistry revival meeting, so I want to hear lots of shouts and amens and preach it, brother. There we go. That's exactly right. Do chemists work in, what do they usually work in larger quantities? Yes, yes, indeed. Is it more convenient to work in grams than AMU than we're using? Well, yeah. Who wants to work with 1 times 10 to the 24th AMU? I mean, it's a 24. It's just ridiculous. So you got to come up with a measurement that we can use. And that's turned out to be the gram. Now, what's really nice about this next number is it helps us use this periodic chart without changing any of the numbers, just changing the units. The mole in Avogadro's number. By the way, you're invited to a hot dog roast and s'mores bonfire Friday evening, October 22, in celebration of Mole Day, which is going to be 6:02 p.m. on October 23rd, except that's a Sabbath, so we're doing it on October 22nd. Why October? 10th month. 6:02 p.m. on 10/23. Except we're actually doing a 10th of 10th. And so everybody's invited. The chemistry department's supporting this. We'll go out to the point there behind the owner's house. Big old bonfire and hot dog roast in honor of Avogadro's and his number. All right, the practical unit for dividing a collection of atoms is the mole. 1 mole of atoms is 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd atoms. So now you have another name for a number. We know 12 has the number, or 12 has the number, has the name dozen. 144 has the name gross. And now we have 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd has the name mole. Mole. So if your mom asked you to go to the store and get a mole of eggs, you'd go, "What, Ma? You got to be kidding me." "No, I'm going to bake a cake." Wow. Except that many eggs would probably be larger than the volume of the earth. We probably could figure that out, couldn't we? We should figure that out sometime. This is called a mole. It's also called Avogadro's number. Avogadro's number is calculated in a variety of ways. It's the concept of the mole. Now, a mole is a way of counting things. When I said, "I want you to go get me a mole of Hershey bars," how many Hershey bars would you get me? A mole's worth. What number is that? 6.022. Right. Again, probably larger than the physical size of the earth, all right? Because that is a huge, huge number. But given the fact that how tiny atoms are, a mole of atoms is actually a fairly convenient number. All right, so the mole. You must make this convenient. You can find the mole as a what kind of unit? Counting. The mole is abbreviated MOL. The mole simply unit defines an amount of something. A dozen defines 12. A gross defines 144. Atomic mass of one atom of an element corresponds to? What's wrong? It was only counting an amount. I mean, how hard is that to write down? Let's go. Move it or lose it. Let's go, folks. You're not laughing or smiling because of something I said, are you? No, because I'm not that funny. Must have been something that... Never mind. At any rate, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean there's no one chasing you. All right, so you're done writing this down. Okay, good. Let's go ahead. Atomic mass of one atom of an element, of course, the average mass of a single atom is in AMU. The mass of a mole is in grams. What? So one atom is 19 AMU. One mole is 19 grams. Huh? The mole is a conversion unit between AMU and grams. Now, so, let's take this fluorine. I said one atom of this fluorine weighs how much? 18.989940 AMU. The mole number is very tricky. Because if I said I had 1 mole of these fluorines, and how many's in 1 mole? How many? 0.2 times 10 to the what? 23rd. If I had that many atoms of fluorine, I would no longer have 18.98884 AMU. I'd have 18.98884 grams. So the mole is the number of units that converts this number unit from AMU into grams. So one atom of boron weighs 10.1 atom. One atom of boron weighs 10.88811. I said one atom of boron weighs 10.811 AMU. There you go. Thanks for shouting it out. But if I said one mole of boron weighs 10.811 grams. So that mole converts all these weight numbers from AMU into grams per mole. Is a mole a number? Is a mole a number of objects? Is a mole a number of objects? Is a dozen a number of objects? Is a mole a number of objects? What is the number of the mole? 23rd, all right. What's the number of the beast? Is that relevant to what I've been talking about? Excellent. No, it hasn't. So, let's take a look at wolfram. Do you love wolfram? Anybody here acquainted with wolfram? Anybody ever used wolfram before? Anybody know what the common name for wolfram is? Tungsten. Tungsten. If you've used an incandescent bulb, guess what kind of filament's in that incandescent bulb? Tungsten. But what's the actual chemical name? The real name for tungsten? Wolfram. You now know some isolated bit of data that 80% of the country does not know. Okay? Maybe even 90%. Would not know that wolfram is tungsten. Okay, if I could find the mass of one atom of tungsten, it would weigh 183.84 what? One atom of tungsten, 183.84 AMU. But if I accumulated 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd atoms of tungsten and put them on a balance, that would be how many grams? 183.84 grams per mole. So this is a computer that connects atoms, AMU, with moles, grams. Okay? Alrighty then. Voila, 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 voila. So 18 grams of fluorine or 19 grams per mole of fluorine. All right, so molar mass. The molar mass is the mass in grams of one mole of atoms. What is the molar mass of carbon? What is the molar mass of carbon? Grams per mole, exactly right, 12.011 grams per mole. This means counting out a mole of carbon atoms, 6.02 to 10 to the 23rd, would mean they'd have a mass of 12.01 grams. Mole of any element contains the same number of atoms, 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. Do you have a calculator here? Can you put 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd in there? Okay, I simply want you to do the following. I'm going to give you a series of exercises. Enter 6.02 exponent 23. All right. Now, what I want you to do is take that number and divide it by 60. Take this number, 6.02 times 23rd, divide it by 60. Have you done that? Divide it by 60 again. Have you got that?
No.
Divide by 24. Okay. You have that?
No.
Divide by 365. How big a number do you have there? Somebody shout it out. What is it?
1.909563 times 10 to the 16th.
Anybody have an idea of what that is? If you counted out one atom per second, it would take you another number? Say that number again. Years to count out a mole at one atom a second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 to the 16th years later. That's older than the known age of the universe, ladies and gentlemen, to count out one mole of anything at one count a second. Yeah, there's a lot of things in there because the mole, because the atoms are extremely tiny. Anyway, so one mole of any element contains a number. So, lithium. If I had 6.941 grams, how many moles of lithium would I have? If I had 6.941 grams of lithium, how many moles would I have? One. What? Yeah. If I had 22.989770 grams of sodium, how many moles would I have? One. If I had 39.0983 grams of potassium, how many moles of potassium would I have? One. Am I making any sense here? Kind of. In other words, that the number that's listed here is the number of grams it takes to make one mole.
Even though it's different numbers.
Yeah. So, 14.0064674 grams. How many mole? If I had that many grams of nitrogen, how many moles would I have? One. If I had 121.760 grams of antimony, how many moles would I have? One. Well, why? If I've got a mole of these and a mole of these and it's the same number, well, how come this weighs less than this does? Or why does this weigh more than this does?
The molecules are different sizes.
So if your mom said, go to the store and buy me a mole of eggs and carry them home on your back, you being the wise child, your mom didn't raise no fool, you're going to buy what size eggs?
Small.
Because she asked for one mole, which was a number, right? She didn't ask for a particular size, she asked for a particular number. So you're going to carry one mole of small eggs home because they weigh less than one mole of large eggs, but it's the same number of eggs, right? 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd. So that these numbers tell you how much each atom weighs. So let's see here. What's the heaviest black atom without this? Let's see, black with no parentheses. Should be up here, well, right there. 92. Look what it weighs. Every mole of atom weighs 238.0289 grams. Make sure I've got this all plugged in yet because I pulled on it. Now, we use conversion factors. We know density converts grams to mils, atomic mass converts AMU to grams, Avogadro's number converts moles to number of atoms, molar mass converts grams to moles. So there's all kinds of different conversions that we need to do, ladies and gentlemen, that we need to be a part of for this particular chapter 4. So you're going to need to bring a calculator from now on for the next foreseeable few weeks and get this done. Now, strategy for calculating. Map out a pattern. Give the number of grams. Ask for a number of atoms. Intuition conversions are required. Convert grams to moles. Convert moles to atoms. Now, I'm not going to look at this one right now because there's a chart I need for you to memorize. Okay. And what I need for you to do is the following. Let's see here. So that you have to fill in, that you have to fill in. Is that correct? Then they've got some practice calculations. Okay, now just hold on. I want to go to this overhead. You see this overhead? You see this overhead? It should be at the bottom left of the page. You see it? I need for you to memorize this overhead. I'm going to give you a quiz. And the arrows and the boxes will be there. None of the letters will be there. None of the letters. And so I'm going to give you a quiz. Matter of fact, I need this done urgently. The quiz is going to be on Friday, right? That's the next time we meet is Friday? All right. So, let's just quickly see how we can use this. If, for example, I asked you, if I gave you 2 moles of a substance and wanted you to tell me how many atoms there were with that, how would you do that? If I gave you a number of moles and asked you for a number of items, how would you do that? Well, if you take a look at the chart, here you'd see there's the number of moles that you're beginning with. And the question, was it asking for grams or numbers of particles? Numbers of particles. So which one at the base of this, I could either go down here where it says number of particles, or I could go over here mass in grams. Which way should I go? If I'm given the number of moles, which way should I go? Number of particles. So I'm going from here down to here. That arrow's that direction. What does that say? Avogadro's number. Multiply by Avogadro's number. So, let's see here. Calculate the number of atoms in 1.7 moles of boron. So here I was given what information? Number of moles. I was asked to figure out the what? Number of atoms. So by that means, I should use what of these conversions? Moles and multiply by Avogadro's number to get number. Is that right? Say yes. Yeah, so let's try that. So it said, calculate the number of atoms and 1.7 moles of boron. 1.7 moles B, we're going to put it over 1, times. Now, what did it ask us to do? We multiply by what? Avogadro's number. Or, if you're going to make guacamole, you'd use what? Avocado's number. Again, I'm going to have to throw in a laugh track.
Put in a laugh track right here.
Okay, so now I've got it marked. Put in a laugh track. You'll be surprised at how funny it is when you hear a laugh track. That's why they do it on comedies and stuff. So 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd atoms. And this is atoms per what? Mole. That's what it says, Avogadro's number. Avogadro's number is atoms per mole. All right, so now what do I get to cancel out? Mole. And what's left? So I get 1.7 times 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. Could someone, in fact, do that calculation for me? Because I didn't bring my calculator, even though I told you to do it. How rude. How rude, how rude, how rude. All right, so we should get what? What is it? 9 something. Shouldn't it be? What is it? No. 1.024 times 10 to the 24th. Now, of course, we need to round this off to how many decimal points? 2. So the actual number would be 1.0 times 10 to the 24th atoms. Did you see how I used this chart to solve this problem? Let's go on. Find the mass in grams of 2.5 moles of sodium. The mass in grams in 2.5 moles of sodium? What? How is that possible? What are we doing here? That's ridiculous, Dr. Novak. That's way too hard for somebody like us. No, it isn't. I went the wrong direction. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, boom. So, let's go back here. Find the mass in grams of 2.5 moles of sodium. Which one? What are we starting off with? Huh? Number of moles. And what if I go down here? Am I trying numbers of atoms or mass in grams? Mass in grams. Down here. So what am I doing? Multiply by molar mass. What? Multiply by molar mass. What? Okay, so 2.5 moles of sodium. So you pry it out here. 2.5 moles sodium. All over 1. Now the molar mass is the mass of that element in moles. Where do you find that information? The mass of that element in moles. Where do you find that? Periodic chart, periodic table. And so we're looking at sodium, is that right? So what is the mass here in grams per mole? 89770. We'll probably just round it off to 23.0. So, 23.0 grams all over 1 mole. 23.0 grams all over 1 mole. Where did I get the 2.5 moles from? The problem. Where did I get the 23 grams per mole? Where did I get that from? Periodic table. Do the moles cancel out? Yes. Is that a good thing? Yes. 2.5 times 23, what do you get? 57.5. So, please grab 5. Now, this is 2 digits. If we round this off to 2 digits, we'd want to make it what? 58 grams of sodium. So, did you find the mass in grams of 2.5 moles of sodium? Did you do that? Did we just do that here? Yes. Do you recognize it? Does it make sense where I got everything from? Are there any stupid questions in this class? Oh, there is one. What's the one stupid question? The one you don't ask. Yes.
Okay, so as a general rule, do you just want us to round those then?
Yeah, typically round them off to 3 digits or so.
3 digits?
Yeah. What that means primarily is chlorine always needs to be 35.5. Otherwise, you can round fluorine off to 19 and oxygen off to 15 and nitrogen's 14. All these others are really close, but chlorine at 35, always make it 35.5. Or if I do, well, argon, look at that, that's 39.9, just make it 40. Neon is 20, you can just make it 20.0. Okay, so calculate the number of atoms in 5 grams of aluminum. What? That's impossible, Dr. Novak. You're asking me to strain my brain more than possible. Dr. Novak, may I please leave? My brain is full. Well, unfortunately, no, you may not leave, because A, your brain is not full. How much capacity do you have to learn? You have almost an infinite amount of capacity to learn. The limiting factor typically is endurance and discipline. Endurance and discipline. Otherwise, all of you can learn an amount that would be astounding even to yourself. You don't know how the capacity God's put into your brain. You have no idea. Okay, now, let's go back. Calculate the number of atoms in 5 grams of aluminum. So what were we given? We were given what? Mass in, what are we looking for? Number of atoms or number of moles? Number of atoms, we're looking for number of atoms. Is that right? Does that mean we go up here or do we go over here? We're going here, right? The number of atoms in 5 grams of aluminum. Are you able to figure that out? Do you notice how this works on this chart? I know it's a long afternoon on a rainy day in October. But hang in there, folks. These are all points on tests. This is going to get you into your PT dietetics program. So don't give up and don't give in. Now, let's try that again. Let's raise this up. Let's go over here. Calculate the number of atoms. So we go back over here. So we go in mass in grams. We're going to turn it into number of particles. We multiply Avogadro's number by the molar mass. What? So how many grams did we start off with? Of what compound? Aluminum. And then we multiply that by Avogadro's number. Isn't that right? Avogadro's number and molar mass. So we have 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd units per mole all over, what's the mass of aluminum? What's the molar mass of aluminum? 26.98153. I would round it off three digits. What do you get? 27.0. So we put in 27.0 grams per mole. That's the molar mass, right? The Avogadro's number is 6.02 times 23rd per mole. There's no units here because it's just a number. And 27.0 grams per mole, guess what happens to the moles automatically? They cancel out. So you get 6.02 times 10 to the 3rd all over 27 grams. So would someone take 5.0 and divide it by 27? 5.0 and divide it by 27. And then take that number and multiply it by Avogadro's number. 5.0 to 6.02 times 23rd. So it's 5 divided by 27 should be about 1/20. That's 1/5 of a number. So this is, we want something that divided by 5. What do we get when we divide that by 5? So take the number you get from that division and multiply it by 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. What do you get? 1.1 times 10 to the 23rd. And this is in atoms or units. All right, so that's how many atoms it is. And that's less than Avogadro's number because we had less than 1 mole worth here. 5 grams is less than 1 mole's worth of 27 grams for aluminum. Calculate the mass of 5 million atoms of gold. 25 million atoms of gold. Wow, that's a lot of gold, Dr. Novak. That must be worth millions. 5 million atoms of AU. And they want to find the mass of it times. Now, this is all over 1. So we have, let's take a look at our chart. We have, how many particles do we have? 5 million. How do we get into mass in grams? So do we see a mass in grams over here? Yes, we do. We see that box right there. What's its conversion factor? You multiply by molar mass divided by Avogadro's number. So what is the molar mass of gold? Here's AU. That means it's 196.96666. So we made it 3 digits accuracy. It'd be 197. So we put 197 on top. 197 grams AU all over Avogadro's number, 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd equals. So do me a favor. Take 5 million, divide it by 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd, then multiply it by 197. That is the molar mass of gold, and it's right over the atomic mass. Molar mass of gold, 197. Okay? So we're going to get some spectacular number. What do we get? Right? Did you say 164? What'd you get? Times 10 to the 31st? Did you take, this is 5 point, this is 5 times 10 to the, times 10 to the 6, divided by 6.02 to 10 to the 23rd, you should get a number less than, exponent less than 0, less than 1, a negative exponent, right? The 5 million times 197 and divided by 6. No, it shouldn't matter. Okay. All right. Somebody multiply 5 million by 197 and divide that answer by 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. Well, maybe I do have a calculator in here. I do, come to think of it. La dee 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 dee. 5 exponent 6 times 197 equals, and divide by 6.02 exponent, chain sign 23 equals. How is that possible? Oh, I know, I put a minus 23. Stupid me. All right, 5 exponent 6. Times 197 equals, and then we divide by 6.02 exponent 23. Yeah, I get 1.64 times 10 to the minus 15th is what I get. Okay? All right. And this is in grams. Grams. So we have 1.64 exponent chain sign 15. Divided by 28 grams an ounce, that's how many ounces it is, times, how much is gold now? How many dollars an ounce? Actually, it's $1,300 an ounce. 1,300 equals. So that's 7.6 times 10 to the minus 14th dollars worth. Yeah, 5 million. So there's not much, there, is there? Exactly right. There isn't. Now, let's see. Did we do that? Yeah, we did. Now, you want to take a quick break? Yes, no. Why don't we take a quick break? 5 minutes or less. You need to go. I'm going to put this on pause, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to come back. Let's keep going, shall we? All right. We're on chemical formula, formula weight, and molar mass, ladies and gentlemen. And so we're going to keep moving here. And the chemical formula, combination of symbols of the various elements that make up the compound. H2O is the chemical formula for water. Form the unit, the smallest collection of atoms that provide two important pieces of information. The identity of the atom. Oh, come on. There we go. And the relative number of each type of atom. So a formula gives you the kind of atom and the number of each kind. Chemical formula, the kind of each atom and the number of each kind. Consider the following formulas. Now, this seems to be going backwards. We're so used to seeing this sometimes. Most times, H2, two atoms of hydrogen are chemically bound to form a diatomic subscript 2. Two atoms of hydrogen, one atom of oxygen. Lacking of subscript means how many? One. H2O. So there's at least one oxygen atom. Is that correct? All right. Sodium chloride, one atom each of sodium chlorine. Calcium hydroxide, CaOH sub 2. So how many atoms of calcium are there? How many atoms of calcium? How many atoms of oxygen? How many atoms of hydrogen? Correct. Because that subscript 2 affects everything inside the parentheses. Agreed? Yes, indeed. All right. So, how many nitrogens are here? How many nitrogens? Three times. See, now, what number is next to that nitrogen? A one? Yeah, there's one nitrogen and four hydrogens inside that parentheses. Would you agree with that? One nitrogen and four hydrogens. Agreed? But that parentheses, there's how many are assumed to be? I mean, there's that number outside the parentheses, so how many of them are there? There's three of those. Each of those has one nitrogen, so three times one nitrogen is how many nitrogens? Three. How many hydrogens are there in each unit? Four. How many units are there? Three. Three times four is 12. So how many hydrogens are here? 12. Three, not seven, but three units of four each. 12. How many sulfurs? How many oxygens? Okay. How many coppers? How many sulfurs? How many oxygen for the here? How many oxygen total over here with the waters? Five. So four plus five is nine. And how many hydrogens? How many hydrogens? 10 hydrogens. It's exactly correct. 10 hydrogens. Next. So we've done this last week. You remember? Remember doing this last week? Where you had the powder where it's kind of dark blue and the anhydrous is very white, very light blue, almost white. Marked color differences illustrates the fact that these are different compounds. Formula weight and molar mass. Okay, formula weight, right in formula. The sum of the atomic weights of all atoms of the compound is represented by its correct formula. You can represent it in expressed in AMU, that is, per molecule. So if you got one molecule of water, you have two hydrogens and one oxygen. Each oxygen atom weighs 16 AMU. Each hydrogen atom weighs 1. 2 times 1 is 2. 16 plus 2 is 18 AMU per molecule. But if I had a mole, I'd have a molar mass. In grams per mole, numerically equivalent to the formula weight in AMU. So what's the molar mass of water? 18.02 grams per mole. So this is the molar mass. How many units are in a mole of anything? How many units? 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. All right. So, as is my wont, we'll do a thing. So I say mole, and you say 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. Mole.
6.02 times 10 to the 23rd.
Correct. All right. I say 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. You say Avogadro's number. 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. Okay. That's exactly correct. One mole is a number. It's also a mass, depending if it's a mass using this calculator over here called the periodic table of the elements. Formula unit, the smallest collection of atoms which a formula can be established. What's the formula unit for sodium chloride? NaCl. Is it organized like that? No. There's billions of sodiums next to billions of chlorines, but they're in the ratio of 1:1, one sodium for every chlorine. When calculating the formula mass, use the smallest unit of crystal. What's a molar mass of ammonium phosphate? Oh, my goodness. Okay. All right. So what's the molar mass? How many nitrogens do we have here in that formula? How many nitrogens? How many hydrogens? How many phosphorus? How many oxygen? Okay. So three nitrogens is 3 times 14. 12 hydrogens is 12 times 1. 1 phosphorus is 1 times 30. 4 oxygen is 4 times 16. So 3 times 14 plus 12 times 1 plus 30.97 plus 4 times 16 equals 194.10 grams per mole. Okay, where did I get the 14 from? Periodic table. Where did I get the 1 from for the hydrogen? Where did I get the 30.97 from the... Where did I get the 16 from? Yes. Periodic table. A recipe for chemical change. A chemical equation. Da 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 da. Shorthand notation of a chemical reaction. Describes all the substances that react and all the products, the physical states, and the experimental conditions. A very tight shorthand for extremely important things that are going on. Woo! All right. Reactants. What are reactants? And what are the products? Substance produced by the reaction. Reactants going to products with an arrow in between indicating a reaction. All right, features of chemical reactions. The identity of the chemicals, products, and reactants. Reactants are written on the left of an arrow, and products are written on the right. Physical states of reactants and products may be shown in parentheses. If I show a parentheses S, parentheses L, parentheses G, parentheses AQ, okay, right, parentheses CH, chocolate, but it doesn't matter. At any rate, the symbol delta over the reaction arrow means energy is necessary, that's heat, and the equation must be balanced. This is going to be the most challenging exercise in this class, in this year, is to balance these. Because most of you, according to your files, are completely unbalanced. So, that means it's going to be tough for you to balance things. Again, note to self, insert laugh track here. Now, all right, so, features of chemical reactions. You got your compound, you got your reactant, you got your state. You got your products. You got your reaction arrow. You got the delta means that they had to heat it. It's a liquid. It's a gas. This kind of a thing. So, products and reactants must be specified using chemical symbols. Like that. Reactants written on the left. Products written on the right. Physical states are shown in parentheses. I have no idea what I'm doing. I keep pressing and nothing. Oh, there, and there. I guess underlines showed up. And then, what else is happening? Ah! Delta, energy is needed. It's typically heat. And then we're done. Do you know a chemical reaction represents a chemical change? Two more substances changed into new substances. Different chemical and physical properties. That's how you know you have a change, a chemical change. Different product properties in the reactants and products. Ice cold water. Life is good. Did you realize that there's ice available in this department in this building for human use if you want? Although it's actually low on ice, you go in the chemistry reading room and there's a refrigerator there that has an ice dispenser, and you're welcome to get ice, small amounts of ice if you wish to drink. It's human consumable ice. It's the only place in the building that has human consumable ice. All right. Now then, how can you tell if a reaction's occurring? If you see a release of a gas, that means you're probably producing, you have a new chemical reaction. If you see bubbles, you got a chemical reaction. You see a precipitate forming. Have you guys seen a precipitate forming in this, in your lab so far? Yep. Little silver chloride, right? At least that? Yeah. Heat. You may not have heat. Heat are produced, which means the bottle feels hot, or absorbed, it means cold. Color changes, I'm sure you've seen this. So gas, solid, heat, color. All these changes indicate a chemical reaction is occurring. Heat or light is absorbed or emitted. That's a very subtle thing that can be done. That's a color change. Change electrical properties, these are pretty obscure. Electrical magnetic properties before after reaction. Pretty obscure. Writing chemical reactions. We'll learn to identify this stuff. You have different kinds of chemical reactions. It's combination. I think it's combination. What was the, when we had two things going to one thing, what was that called, a combination in the lab? I think it was. Okay. Then you have decomposition. This is what Mozart and Beethoven are doing right now. They're decomposing. Thank you very much. Again, note to self, add laugh track. Let's just... Dr. Novak, it's just because this entire lecture is a joke. That's why we're not laughing. Single replacement and double replacement. And finally, recognize a pattern, help you write and understand these chemical reactions. So we need to pay attention to the single and double and combination decomposition reactions. Have you written that down yet? Are you ready to go to the next slide? Say yes. Yes, okay. Combination reactions. Two or more. We've seen this. A going to B making AB. Examples. Sodium and chlorine making sodium chloride. Magnesium oxide and carbon dioxide making magnesium carbonate. Did you know that magnesium oxide and carbon dioxide will actually burn? You can burn magnesium in carbon dioxide and it will actually produce heat. It's It's really a strange add. If you have a magnesium fire, you can't hit it with either water or carbon dioxide extinguisher. Every once in a while, they have these programs that, you know, the world's biggest explosions or the world's wildest fires or the world's stupidest drivers. You remember seeing these things on cable television? There was one that is, I think, world's biggest explosions or wildest explosions. It was in some foreign country, I think it was. Or was it in Austin? No, it had to be some foreign country because they didn't know any better. They had this metal recycling plant that recycled magnesium. Well, a small amount of the magnesium caught on fire. Well, those lame brains didn't realize that by putting water on magnesium fire, they're doing something like this, only worse. And they're pouring these thousands of gallons onto this magnesium fire, and the thing just erupted and blew up the entire building. And the fire, you know, firefighters and the fire equipment was all knocked over from the force of the blast. It was just quite spectacular because they didn't realize or weren't trained to not put water on a magnesium fire. Now, notice a metal and a nonmetal. If I were said, remember what kind of bond a metal and a nonmetal form? What did I say? Ionic. A nonmetal and a nonmetal form of what? Covalent. And a metal and a metal form what? Alloy. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, this is actually, metal and nonmetal also form an ionic compound. It's sometimes called a salt. Not sodium chloride, but a general thing is a salt. It's any metal or nonmetal combined together is called a salt. It doesn't have to be limited to sodium chloride. Two or more products form a single reactant, reverse of a combination. Examples of mercury oxide turning into liquid mercury and oxygen. Calcium carbonate turning into calcium carbonide and carbon dioxide. Helium calcium carbonate produce carbon dioxide and remove water from a hydrated material. That's the types of decomposition replacement. Single replacement, A plus BC yields B plus AC. You can see these examples here. You got a copper plus silver nitrate makes silver and copper nitrate. Sodium and water make sodium hydroxide and hydrogen gas. You can tell you get silver, you get a silver solid out of this, and you also get hydrogen gas out of that. That's how you know. Types of replacement. These are basically repeating the diagram you just saw before. That's why I'm going through it fairly quickly. Replacement reactions, double replacement. Components undergo a change of partners. AB plus CD yields AD and CB. Actually, I knew of two couples that actually did that. It was the strangest thing where the husband of one couple and the wife of another started having an affair, honestly, and it caused a breakup of both marriages. And so the original people who had the affair got married. I'm not joking, this is true. They got married, and their partners, I don't know, I guess liked each other too, and they got married. Yeah. The partners of two dissolved marriages, the non-adulterous partners, got married. Now, guess what two sets are still married? Which of those two sets are still married? The non-adulterous ones. That's exactly correct. Yeah, that's exactly correct. The stability of a marriage is completely dependent on the effort with which the two determine to hold it together. Okay? The harder you try to make a marriage work, the more likely the marriage will work. Okay? Exactly right. So, is marriage hard work, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, it is. Is it complicated by children? Yes, it is. Many times when children leave the home, it actually becomes a little easier for the two parents. Sometimes it doesn't. But at any rate, are any two given people perfect? No. So, was there something? What was that? Is there some yell or whatever outside? Okay. All right. But anyway, I don't know why I'm going off on that riff. But at any rate, it was just odd that I saw this, and for some reason I remembered it. But it is an absolute true tale, and the two non-adulterous parts of that marriage are still married together. Okay, at any rate, a reaction with acid with the base produces water and a salt. Now, I want you to circle this particular one, especially this particular one. This one has particular relevance and universality. This is where reaction of an acid with the base, and we haven't defined that at all, but we will produce always water and a salt. This is sometimes called a neutralization reaction. Fill that in, write it in, neutralization reaction. Okay. These others are, again, kind of interesting. Again, the partners exchange and get two different compounds, double replacement. A plus B, yield C, types of chemical reactions. One more. Precipitation reactions. Chemical change in solution produces insoluble products. It's where a solid comes out of solution. We're nearly done here. We're going to stop eventually when it changes. To predict if a reaction or precipitation reaction can occur, it's helped to know some of the solubilities of ionic compounds. And bingo. Now, we're done. Now, for today, what we're going to do is how it, what? Sure. Just got one thing in it. How many slides did we get through today? Oh, yeah. Now, let's go ahead. What I want you to know is the following. I want you to put a little check mark behind that, beside that first line. Sodium, potassium, ammonium compounds are generally soluble. So potassium, I'm going to give out a name probably you've never heard before. Potassium sulfate, is that soluble? Why? Potassium is generally soluble. Okay. Ammonium perchlorate, soluble or not? Sodium iodide. Soluble or not? Yeah, that's just simply check mark nitrates and acetates. Okay, check mark chlorides, bromides, and iodides, and check mark carbonates and phosphates. Don't check mark the last one. We're not going to worry about the last one. The hydroxides and sulfides are generally insoluble. So the first four, sodium, nitrate, chlorides, and carbonates, check mark. I'll expect you to be able to know those. Now, I'm going to stop the lecture here, and let's review what's going to be going on Friday. Shall we, ladies and gentlemen?
Purple sky to close the day. I wade the surf where dolphins play. The taste of salt, the dance of waves, and my soul wells up with hallelujahs. A lightning flash, my pounding heart, a breaching wave, a shooting star. Give testimony that you are, and my soul wells up with hallelujah. Oh, praise him all his mighty works. There is no language where you can't be heard. Your song goes out to all the earth. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Cratered moon and sparrow's wings, oh, thunder's boom and Saturn's rings. Unveil our Father as you sing, and my soul wells up with hallelujah. So praise him all his mighty works. There is no language where you can be heard. Your song goes out. Hallelujah, hallelujah. pulse of life within my wrist. A fallen snow, a rising mist. There is no higher praise than this. And my soul wells up, my soul wells up.